The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Switching between different tools to finish a project can feel stressful and disjointed, especially while juggling tight deadlines in a fast-paced work environment. Now, there's a better way. Grammarly built a writing service that's a game changer for professionals. It helps move your ideas forward and sharpen your words for better results, all in one place. With Grammarly's AI agents, you get writing support at every step to bring polish and impact to your emails, reports, and proposals without the tab overload. Email sounds robotic, phrasing feels off, writing for a high-stakes client, Grammarly's got you covered. You can even ask Grammarly's AI chat to help brainstorm brilliant proposals, summarize meeting notes in seconds, or even shape a winning sales strategy, all right from your doc. 93% of professionals say that Grammarly helps them get more done. Now, it's your turn. Sign up for free and get stronger results. Faster work, smarter sentences, clearer finishes. Visit Grammarly.com to get started. That's Grammarly.com.
Information discussed in this podcast may be sensitive in nature to some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, sees over 20 million visitors each year. 20 million. Myrtle Beach is a destination for young and old alike, with no shortage of activities, restaurants, and shopping. And of course, these 60 continuous miles of beach, which is how it received the nickname, the Grand Strand. But Myrtle Beach does have a darker side too. Neighborhood Scout gives Myrtle Beach a 0 on the crime scale. Now this scale, which shows that a score of 100 is the most safe, and a score of 0 as being the least safe, shows Myrtle Beach as being one of the most dangerous areas in the United States. 1 out of 10 people will experience a crime while in Myrtle Beach. 1 in 73 people will be the victim of what is considered a violent crime. Those statistics, along with the fact that millions of people visit each year, mean it is likely there will be missing person cases coming up. And in honor of the recent developments in the Brittany Drexel case, who was a young woman reported missing from Myrtle Beach back in 2009 and was recently found this year deceased in the southern part of the state, we're going to take a look at some other unsolved missing person cases. In today's show, part one of the Myrtle Beach missing series, we will look at the stories of Heather Elvis, a young woman with a tragic story. A story that did receive a fair amount of media attention, and you may have heard of. And we will look at the case of Johnny Lamar Brown, a man who walked away from the Seacrest Motel while on vacation with his family, and a man whose disappearance you likely hadn't heard of. Where are Heather Elvis and Johnny Brown? Hello, and welcome to a bonus episode of the Where Are They podcast. We are going to jump right into the stories of the two missing person cases we're covering today, the stories of Heather Elvis and Johnny Lamar Brown. Remember, this is just part one of our Missing in Myrtle Beach series. Heather Elvis. Heather Elvis was a young 20-year-old young woman. In December of 2013, she had her own apartment with a friend as her roommate. She was working at a popular Myrtle Beach restaurant, The Tilted Kilt. And while most aspects of Heather's life was going well for her, she had one hiccup. Heather had been involved with a married man almost twice her age. This older man, Sidney Moorer, had been part of Heather's life for a few months, but recently the two had parted ways. The relationship wasn't healthy. Sidney's wife, Tammy, had learned about the affair and had been harassing Heather and giving her a hard time. Heather knew she had to walk away. On December 17th, 2013, Heather had a date, the first date with a young man closer to her own age. She was excited about it. She was looking forward to it and expressed as much to her best friend and roommate, Brianna. Heather went on this date and texted her friend a few times throughout the evening. She was having a good time. She was enjoying herself. At one point in the night, her date even let her try and drive his manual car. She had never driven a stick shift before. He was teaching her, and she was enjoying it, and he would actually take a photo of her smiling as she worked to try and drive the car. This would be the last photo ever taken of Heather Elvis. Heather's date dropped her off at her apartment just after 1 o'clock in the morning. Heather called her friend and roommate, Brianna, who was away visiting family. They chatted about the date for a while, and then Heather would drop a bombshell. Sidney had been calling and texting her, and she didn't know what to do. She also told Brianna that he was telling her that he was leaving his wife and wanted to be with her. Brianna, afraid Sidney would make a mistake and open that door again, advised her not to do anything yet, just not answer back and just sleep on it before doing anything rash. Heather assured her she would. They would hang up the call around 2 o'clock in the morning. The next day, some boaters called to report a suspicious car parked at Peachtree Boat Landing. Peachtree Boat Landing in Myrtle Beach is an access point to the Waccamaw River. It's a dark and remote area, really used mainly by locals. The person that found the car there said it was just parked in an odd way and somewhere that it shouldn't have been. Authorities arrive, they run the plates, and they determine that the car belonged to Terry Elvis. They called Mr. Elvis to inform him and find out why his car was abandoned there. And he said that was actually his daughter's car. It was just in his name. A quick search of the car showed no signs of Heather, however. Pretty early on, Terry, Heather's dad, said he felt something wasn't right. This just didn't make any sense that his car would be there. And nobody could reach Heather. Heather's purse was not found in the vehicle, and nor was her cell phone. Brianna brought authorities the first clue when she let them know that Heather had gone on a date the night before, a first date. And she also let them know about Heather's relationship with Sidney. Heather had not told anyone else about Sidney, so the family was completely shocked to learn about this. Her dad said he had no idea that this man existed. Terry was able to scour through his daughter's cell phone records and noticed that the last calls came from a number he didn't know. So he texted the number and asked that person to call him. He did receive a call back from Sidney, and Terry immediately told him that he was looking for his daughter. But Sidney, right off the bat, became combative with Terry at first and denied knowing Heather at all. When Terry told him that they had her phone records, Sidney changed his story and said that he had broken it off with Heather, but she had kept pursuing him. Brianna, however, had stated the opposite. While the disappearance of Heather Elvis consumes Myrtle Beach, people come out in droves to support the family and help search for her. Meanwhile, law enforcement was able to further analyze the cell phone data and also found some surveillance footage. They did also question and rule out the young man that Heather had had a date with the previous night. First, through cell phone data, they confirmed that Sidney was likely lying about his relationship status with Heather. and they were able to construct a timeline based on the phone records and this video surveillance footage that they were able to uncover. The night that Heather had arrived home from her date, after she had got off the phone with Brianna, for some reason, Heather made the decision to call Sydney back. Here is the timeline constructed by law enforcement. At 3:17 a.m., Heather calls Sydney's cell phone. The call lasts for several minutes. At 3:36 a.m., a home near Sydney's home catches a black pickup truck driving by. Authorities believe this is Sydney's black pickup truck. A minute later, a local business also catches this truck driving down the road and heading in the direction of Peachtree Boat Landing. At 3:41 a.m., Heather's phone either goes dead or is turned off. At 3:46 a.m., the black truck is caught on surveillance again, coming from the Peachtree Landing direction and heading back toward Sydney's house. Whatever happened at the Peachtree Boat Landing, as authorities believe, happened within 5 minutes. While the search for Heather Elvis continues, some information now comes out about Sydney's wife, Tammy. In fact, in the midst of all of this, Tammy makes a Facebook post that reads, quote, "Well, Sydney cheated on me in the months of September and October with a psycho whore who has since went missing, and now her crazy daddy is threatening to kill my children and Sydney, therefore making Sydney stupid. This girl grabbed his business card out of the office at her workplace and had fantasies about him as far back as March, but talked about it in July, even naming him. I don't know of any other word to describe my husband at this point. All you have to do is research this girl's Twitter and her Tumblr to see what a twisted person she truly is. I could care less, seeing that I had a boyfriend of my own for the past couple of years, but when someone brings my children into the scenario, it's a whole other story. I will not tolerate anyone hurting my children because my husband banged a hoe 3 times in the backseat of her car and nothing more. I could care less what he screwed around with, but the fact that this jerk is stalking my family is unacceptable." End quote. There were also a multitude of threatening text messages sent to Heather from Tammy, as Tammy had learned about her husband's affair months earlier. After a lengthy investigation, Sydney and Tammy are arrested and would go on to be charged with murder, obstruction of justice, and 2 counts of indecent exposure. This was the result of an investigation that involved video footage of Tammy and Sydney spending hours deep cleaning their truck in the driveway, while the home behind them that they lived in was a complete and utter disaster. Sydney's first trial ended in a mistrial. In 2017, he was sentenced to 10 years in prison after being found guilty of obstruction of justice. In 2019, he was found guilty of kidnapping and sentenced to another 30. Tammy Moore was also sentenced to 30 years in prison. Both have continually worked to appeal their convictions and maintain their innocence. To date, Heather Elvis has not been found. Heather is described as a Caucasian female, 20 years old when she vanished, and would today be 28. She has brown hair and brown eyes. If you have any information on the whereabouts of Heather Elvis, or any information at all regarding her case, please contact the Horry County Police Department at 843-915-5350. Johnny Lamar Brown. On August 5th, 2012, Johnny Lamar Brown was visiting Myrtle Beach with his family. Johnny is a dependent adult and requires assistance with daily care. In August of 2012, Johnny was 43 years old, and this was the first time he had ever been out of the state of Georgia. His family, like many families do, had decided to take a vacation to Myrtle Beach. They were ready for some fun on the beach, at the pool, visiting restaurants, and doing all the touristy things there are to do in Myrtle Beach. Johnny and his family traveled from Cartersville, Georgia, which is located in the northwest corner of the state, a 7-hour drive to Myrtle Beach. They chose to stay at the Seacrest Hotel, an oceanfront property, and on the day of August 5th, 2012, for some reason, Johnny walked away from his hotel. Someone did see him just a couple of doors down, talking to a woman at an ice cream shop. But from there, Johnny would vanish into thin air. Johnny's family immediately jumped into action. Their Johnny was not only dependent on them for care, but he was completely unfamiliar with the Myrtle Beach area. They knew that he was probably lost and very, very scared. They searched and they searched, but they couldn't find Johnny anywhere. And I can only imagine how scary that must have been. I'm sure at first they just believed he had wandered off and they would certainly find him soon. But as time pressed on, their panic grew. They noted, as people searched for Johnny, that he gets confused easily and he doesn't like to be touched or approached quickly. He also has a severe speech impediment that makes it difficult for others to understand him. So while they needed the public's help in searching for Johnny, they also begged everybody to be cautious when and if they did find him. They also said that Johnny is scared of loud noises, absolutely terrified of thunder and lightning. After some time, Johnny's family began to believe that Johnny was probably trying to find his way back home to Cartersville, Georgia. It was also thought that maybe Johnny had become immersed in the homeless and transient population in Myrtle Beach, which is significant, and they urged people to be on the lookout for him. They also set up a Facebook page for him, Help Find Johnny Lamar Brown. There isn't much information at all about Johnny Lamar Brown's case. Taking a look at the map, the Seacrest Oceanfront Resort is located at 803 South Ocean Boulevard, down near the Family Kingdom Amusement Park area. But really, once Johnny left the hotel, it's really hard to say where he could have gone from there. He could have easily found his way to the opposite end of Myrtle Beach and become very scared and very lost. Johnny vanished in August of 2012, almost 10 years ago now. Where could Johnny have gone this whole time? Where is he? Johnny is described as an African-American male with black hair and brown eyes. Johnny sometimes went by the nickname JB. At this point, he could be anywhere. His family still resides in Cartersville, Georgia, and believes that Johnny is still alive and out there trying to find his way back home to them. There hasn't been a whole lot of media coverage on Johnny's case, so please share his story. Go join their Facebook page and show your support to the family. Help spread awareness of Johnny's case. If you do have any information on the whereabouts of Johnny Lamar Brown, please contact the Myrtle Beach Police Department at 843-918-1826. Thank you for listening to part one of the Myrtle Beach Missing. So many people travel to Myrtle Beach each year, and it's certainly hopeful that these stories will reach someone out there who knows something about these cases. Missing person cases can still be solved many, many years later, as we've seen recently in the Brittany Drexel case. Today's stories about Heather and Johnny are certainly heartbreaking, especially now knowing if Johnny is still out there trying to find his way back home to Georgia. Part two of the Myrtle Beach Missing will be up in the coming week. Please stay tuned for the continuation and that story that involves a 3-year-old child and a young man from out of town who would vanish into thin air. Information discussed in this podcast may be sensitive in nature to some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. South Carolina sees millions of visitors every year, many of them to the coastal town of Myrtle Beach. And Myrtle Beach does have some of the nation's most beautiful beaches, and it also boasts some of the best family fun around. But all that fun can come with a price. When you put a million people in one town on a hot summer day, things can happen. Last week, we talked about the baffling disappearance of Johnny Lamar Brown, a dependent adult that requires assistance with his daily care. In August of 2012, Johnny was 43 years old, and this was the first time he had ever been out of the state of Georgia. Johnny walked away from the Seacrest Hotel and was never seen or heard from again. Heather Elvis has a tragic story. The 20-year-old girl would disappear, and two people would be arrested and charged with a crime in connection to her case. But still, to this day, Heather is still missing. Today, we are going to talk about Todd Massey, a young man from Ohio that was last seen in Myrtle Beach back in 1992. But his car would be found abandoned in Virginia. We will also talk about the case of Shanta Johnson, a super sad, tragic story of a little girl lost in the system and now lost in the world. Another child born that never really had a chance in life. Shanta was in foster care and only 3 years old when she disappeared. And we'd like to know, where are Todd Massey and Shanta Johnson? Hello, and welcome back to the Where Are They podcast, a bonus episode. This is the second episode of the Myrtle Beach Missing series. And the two cases we are talking about today are taking us back to the year 1992. This year, 2022, then marks the 30th anniversary of both of these cases. And sadly, no real updates or news has really come to light in that time. Todd Massey. Todd James Massey of Ohio found his way down to Myrtle Beach in June 1992. Todd was 23 years old and, unbeknownst to his parents, had started dabbling in drugs. Todd's case is extremely limited in information. Extremely. One report says he lives in Akron, Ohio, but his missing person file lists both Boardman, Ohio, as an investigating agency, along with Summit County, Ohio, which is the county that Akron is in. Boardman is about an hour from the city of Akron. I'm not fully sure why both agencies are listed, possibly due to where his parents resided. And it's also noted in his file that his father worked as a minister in the mid-1990s and resided in the state of Indiana. It's difficult with the little tidbits of information to try and connect the dots here, to try and construct a timeline or even form a story of what happened leading up to Todd's disappearance. We also don't know why Todd traveled to Myrtle Beach or if anybody was with him. There was some talk about Todd traveling to follow the Grateful Dead band, but I found nothing more to confirm that. However, I did confirm that the Grateful Dead did perform at the Charlotte, North Carolina Coliseum on June 17, 1992. Charlotte is a couple hours north of Myrtle Beach, so it's possible that the band was in that area in the month of June that year. And on June 16th, 1992, Todd was seen at a drive-through ATM in Myrtle Beach. The next day, June 17th, 1992, Todd's car was found abandoned in the woods of Sussex County, Virginia. about a five-hour drive from Myrtle Beach. Authorities discovered the car and noted that the license plate had been removed. They did find some of Todd's personal belongings in the car, but there was no sign of Todd. And the fact that the license plate was removed caused concern for authorities. Now, looking at the map, Sussex County runs right through Interstate 95, which, of course, is the main highway thoroughfare on the East Coast. If you're on the East Coast of the United States, you're familiar with I-95. Sussex County is just west of Virginia Beach and just south of Richmond. The car was found in the woods, and Google Maps does show that that area of Virginia is exceptionally rural. No one knew any reason why Todd would have drove to that area. No one knew of any connections that he might have had there. Authorities speculated that maybe he was seen at the ATM and then subsequently robbed and harmed while whomever did that disposed of his car. Or had he left Myrtle Beach to head to Charlotte, North Carolina, as the Grateful Dead concert was the next day, and then something happened to him there? Did it have anything to do with his possible drug abuse? Or had he driven himself to that location? But why? And why remove his own license plate? Then we have the biggest question of all. Regardless of what exactly happened, where is Todd James Massey? Law enforcement has kept this case open for years and has kept a watch on his social security number, which has not been touched. This June will mark the 30th anniversary of Todd's disappearance. Todd Massey was born on September 5th, 1968. He was last seen on June 16th, 1992, when he was 23 years old. He would today be 53 years old. Todd is described as a Caucasian male, 5'6" tall, and weighing around 150 pounds at the time of his disappearance. He has blonde hair and green eyes. Todd also has a 5-inch surgical scar right above his navel. Anyone with any information at all on the whereabouts of Todd James Massey is asked to call the Summit County Sheriff's Office at 330-643-2111. Shanta Johnson. Shanta Marie Johnson was only 3 years old in 1992, but her 3 years had already been traumatic for her since the very beginning. Shanta was born on January 3rd, 1989, and her biological mother was a drug addict. Not only that, it was learned that Shanta herself was born addicted to cocaine. The Department of Children and Family Services would remove Shanta from her biological mother and put her into foster care. By the year 1992, Shanta and a brother that would be born right after her were put into the care of Susan and Willie Johnson. The Johnsons were hoping and planning on adopting both Shanta and her brother. In early 1992, however, the Department of Children's Services opened an investigation into the Johnsons for possible abuse. Shanta had been taken to the emergency room for some injuries, and the nurse felt that the injuries could possibly have stemmed from abuse. She reported it to authorities. The investigation also meant questioning the babysitter for the Johnson family. And the sitter said that she too had had some concerns. She said she was recently changing Shanta's diaper and noticed a burn on her backside. Shanta, when asked about it, told the babysitter it was hot grease. The sitter said she asked Susan about it, but Susan said that it was actually the result of a sunburn. And for some reason, the children were not removed from Susan's care during this investigation. On July 19th, 1992, during a shopping trip around 3:30 p.m., Shanta was reported missing. Susan reported her missing, saying that they had been shopping in the toy department of the Kmart at the then Briarcliff Mall when Shanta just vanished. She looked around for her in the store, thinking maybe the three-year-old just wandered off, as they tend to do, but she couldn't find her anywhere. Authorities took to searching also, and they were able to pull surveillance footage from the Kmart, which showed them something surprising. Susan had entered that Kmart store at 3:30 p.m. alone. Shanta was not with her. Susan maintained her innocence, however, and stuck to her story. Investigators also learned that Shanta's biological family just happened to be having their family reunion in Myrtle Beach that very weekend. They considered the possibility that someone had abducted her, somebody from the biological family. Her mother was still in jail on drug charges, but there was a whole network of extended family, and they were all right there in the area on that day. Definitely seems like a logical theory, except all family members were interviewed and ruled out. This put the focus back on Susan. The day after Shanta disappeared, on July 20th, Shanta's little brother was removed from the Johnson's care and put with another family. He would go on to be adopted. The disappearance allegedly happened at the Briarcliff Mall on the north end of Myrtle Beach, which has since been renamed the Myrtle Beach Mall as of 2007. It is not publicly known where the Johnsons lived, but investigators began a thorough search of their property. They would come to believe that Susan had harmed Shanta, buried her on the property, but then would end up taking her remains to another location. Susan was charged with child abuse, but Shanta would never be found. That poor little girl never stood a chance. Shanta is described as an African-American female with short black hair and brown eyes. Shanta's birth name was Reed, so authorities want to note that she may be going by the name Shanta Reed if she is out there. Shanta was 3 years old in 1992. She stood 3 foot tall and weighed around 40 pounds. She was wearing a navy blue t-shirt with the cartoon character Mickey Mouse, white shorts, and white sneakers with blue trim and rabbit designs. If you know anything at all about the case of Shanta Johnson, Shanta Reed, please contact the Cumberland County Sheriff's Office at 919-323-1500. The four people we have covered in our Myrtle Beach series, Part 1 and Part 2, Heather Elvis, Johnny Lamar Brown, Todd Massey, and Shanta Johnson are all still missing. And all were last known to be in the Myrtle Beach area. Also, the episode of Brittany Drexel is available on our main podcast channels and over on YouTube. Brittany had vanished from Myrtle Beach in 2009, but just last month, May of 2022, Brittany's remains were found. And someone has been arrested in connection with that case. You'll find more information on our Brittany Drexel episode. I so appreciate everyone who has listened to these stories and who supports our show here on Patreon. You can always reach me with any suggestions or feedback on social media, or you can email me at canwefindthem@gmail.com. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode. We will be back again next week with another unsolved missing person case. And until then, stay safe and hug your loved ones.